Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, July 1st, 2026. We have a busy front page this week. We'll start with a couple of stories from the Ford County Public Building Commission. First, Del Bruins appointed commission chairman. Paxton, the Ford County Public Building Commission has a new chairman. Del Bruins of Paxton, a longtime member of the commission who has served previously as its secretary, was appointed by a unanimous vote to replace Tom McQuinn as chairman for the next year during the commission's annual meeting on Wednesday, June 24th at the county courthouse. The five-member commission is also comprised of Ron Shapland of rural Cullum, who was retained as vice chairman, plus Tom Townsend of Gibson City and Jeff Latz of rural Garber. Latz was absent. Meanwhile, due to an oversight, the commission did not vote on the appointment of a new secretary to replace Bruins, meaning the commission will need to do so at its next meeting. All three of the officer appointments are for one-year terms. McQuinn, a rural Paxton resident, has served as the commission's chairman since June 2022 after Shapland held the position for a number of years. McQuinn is also a member of the county board representing District 1 and previously served on the Paxton City Council. The 61-year-old Bruins, the husband of Ford County Supervisor of Assessment Pam Bruins, is a self-employed contractor with 43 years of experience working in construction. Bruins has served on the commission for more than 20 years and previously served four terms on the Paxton City Council. In January, Bruins was appointed as multi-township assessor for Button and Patton Townships, replacing Fred Magers. Magers had defeated Bruins for election to the post the previous year, only to resign months later. The second story from the Ford County Public Building Commission comes with a big headline, Mandated to Do It. Building addition to courthouse, not just a want of facility staff, chairman stresses. Paxton, the construction of an addition to the Ford County Courthouse is being considered not merely because staff want new space, the Ford County Public Building Commission's chairman stressed during the five-member panel's annual meeting Wednesday night. It's not something that you guys just want. It's something that is mandated for us to do, newly appointed Chairman Del Bruins of Paxton said as he looked towards Judge Matt Fitton, Sheriff Chad Johnson, and State's Attorney Andrew Killian seated nearby. Turning in the direction of the local media, Bruins then said, "Once again, it would be nice if the story told what we're really doing here, and that it's not that we want to do it, it's that we are being mandated to do it. That needs to be told." The proposed courthouse addition, or annex, as it was often called Wednesday, would be built either to the north or west of the courthouse and be either one or two stories tall. It would be connected with the jail and possibly the courthouse too, and contain a new courtroom, jury assembly room, and offices for the prosecutor, public defender, judge, circuit clerk, and probation and court services department. The courthouse then would be used exclusively for the administrative side of the county's operation. On Wednesday, the Public Building Commission heard a half-hour presentation from representatives of Performance Services, an architectural firm that has offered its specialized design-build services for the project. Like Bruins did later in the meeting, Performance Services representatives noted that the project would not only address the separation, accessibility, visibility, and acoustics issues that are common in an old courthouse like Ford County's, but would also bring the court into compliance with Illinois Supreme Court's minimum courtroom standards. Currently, the court is not, they said. The state actually mandates a set of minimum standards for courtrooms, and those standards are very important. said Tim Weber, principal architect for Performance Services. They are focused on accessibility. They are focused on the fairness of trials to make sure everybody stays separated and that the trial moves forward in the best possible manner. Everything we're going to talk about today is really focused on that state mandate because I think most of the improvements really revolve around the courtroom. Weber, joined by colleagues Blaine Meadows, Business Development Manager, and Matt Burris, Senior Estimator, presented the commission with four preliminary design options, all involving the construction of a new building ranging from 15,000 to 17,000 square feet, rather than renovating the current court facilities to bring them into compliance. A lot of times, it's most cost-effective to take a look at the building outside of a legacy facility, noted Weber, because some of the changes that you need to make in order to bring it up to speed can be costly, and some can be very difficult. Historically, in courthouses like this, the courts were placed on the upper level, and those types of constraints make it very difficult to create the separation that we need between detainees, the public, and the judge and staff. Fitton said a new criminal justice facility would allow the county to keep the public, jurors included, separated from victims or witnesses testifying at a trial or defendants in custody who currently are transported from the jail to court and back, using public hallways, elevators, and outdoor sidewalks, posing a safety and security risk. There's a number of security issues we have with the court system, Fitton said, and we have to do our utmost to prevent issues where people are exposed to risk. Other counties in Illinois have already addressed similar problems by adding on to their courthouses or building new ones, Weber said. That includes Johnson County, whose courthouse needed to be brought up to speed to ensure fair trials, Weber said. Separation is super important to make sure everything stays safe and jury trials remain fair. Accessibility is also important to make sure it's equitable at all levels, not just for the public, but for those who are participating in court as well. Visibility is super important, too, along with acoustics to make sure everything is seen and heard appropriately, said Weber. While the project is still in its early planning stage, Meadows presented a potential timeline for the project's completion, starting with the collection of data for an initial feasibility study. In a perfect world, this is kind of how fast we could work, Meadows said as he reviewed the timeline, showing continued data collection in July, benchmarking the project's parameters against cost trends in August, followed by the finalizing of a funding plan, the issuance of a comprehensive report to the commission in September, the procurement process in November, contract awarding in December, and the start of construction next August or September. During that process, over the next couple of months, we'd be looking to sit down and meet with some of you to start building that consensus in terms of all these things we're going to talk about, in terms of the options for design that we've put together, Meadows told the courthouse staff in attendance Wednesday. Obviously, you're going to want to start to hone in and really start to put that together, because the intent of us doing a study is really to set you guys up so that you have a clear scope of work and a budget attached to it so you can then go out and solicit companies to bid for the construction aspect. In deciding between the four design options, Meadows said the commission will need to determine an affordable price range that fits within its needs. The whole intent is to assess all the options, build a consensus on what you want, what you need, what's compliant, and what goes into the budget that you can afford, and then move forward from there, Meadows told the commission. Option one calls for a two-story addition to the north of the courthouse where a parking lot is currently located, with the addition being connected to both the courthouse to the south and the jail to the west. Option 2 calls for a one-story addition to the north of the courthouse that would also be connected to both the courthouse and the jail, while option 3 calls for a one-story annex to the north of the courthouse that would be connected to only the jail. Option 4 calls for a one-story addition to the west of the courthouse and includes connections to both the jail and the courthouse. Building to the west of the courthouse would present some challenges, Weber noted, due to the presence of an underground fuel storage tank and utilities there. As a result, doing so would also likely cost more than building to the north, Weber said. It's a little tricky over there, Weber said. There's a lot of stuff going on. Bruin stressed that we're going to look at all options before we spend taxpayer money. Bruin said further discussion will take place. We're going to have more than this meeting to discuss the project, Bruin said. There's going to be a couple of more meetings probably before we get to the point of pursuing anything. Meadows said he is open to any feedback about the design options currently on the table. We're just hoping you're starting to see that we're capturing all of the areas of the bigger picture and not just trying to shove one set of designs in front of you and saying, this is what you need to do, Meadows told the commission. We want this to be a collaborative approach to making sure everybody's on the same page on what is being done. Meadows said his firm has prepared a memorandum of understanding for the commission to sign, which would give the company permission to continue its work on the project's feasibility study. It's not an obligation for the county to award us work, Meadows noted. It's just sort of a written handshake between us and the county. Bruin said he has been impressed with what he has heard so far from Performance Services. I really like what these guys are talking about, Bruin said. I really like the way they go through things, ask questions, how they want input from everybody here so we know that we're going to get what we need. We're just need to figure out where we're going to be putting the building and how much we're going to spend. The project is expected to be funded by a bond issuance, which would result in an increase in property taxes. The commission's last bond issuance from 2013, which provided $800,000 to make improvements to the courthouse, was paid off in 2023. Bruins noted that no referendum would be required for the courthouse addition project, which could cost upwards of $10 million. I've had several people say it should come up for a vote, that it should be on the ballot, Bruin said, but I've told them that, unfortunately, we don't have to do that. Another meeting of the commission to discuss the topic is expected to be held in late July in the courthouse's small courtroom. The meeting will be open to the public. Now we go back to the front page and hear from Paxton Buckley Lotus School Board. Busby named PBL High School Principal. Assistant principal at elementary school hired to lead high school, where passion lies. Paxton. The Paxton Buckley Lotus School Board approved the promotion of Clara Peterson Elementary School Assistant Principal Melinda Busby to the role of PBL High School Principal during a special meeting Thursday night. Busby has been assistant principal of the grade school in Paxton since 2023 and previously was assistant principal of the high school for 4 years. Busby, whose promotion is effective this month, will replace Hannah Eshelman, who was promoted earlier in June from high school principal to assistant superintendent of teaching and learning. Returning to PBL High School as principal is a true honor, and I am incredibly excited to be leading our school, Busby said in a prepared statement. I have great confidence in our staff and community. I look forward to contributing our shared future. I am eager to partner with our talented educators to further the district's tradition of academic rigor and excellence. Incoming Superintendent Eric Bohm said that Busby, who will be paid a $102,000 salary under an initial one-year contract as high school principal, stood out amongst the three candidates invited to interviews earlier in the week. She came in and did a fantastic job in the interview and has done a fantastic job in her role at Clara Peterson, and it is with great enthusiasm that I recommend her, Malm told the school board prior to its unanimous vote of approval. She came into the interview and did a fantastic job and answered the questions the best, Malm said after the meeting. And we felt like her vision and mission moving forward was exactly what we wanted. The candidates interviewed had varied levels of experience. One had already been a high school principal before in a couple of different districts, Malm said. Another was in a very large district and had served in several different roles. Busby's blossoming career in school administration began in 2018 when she was employed as Dean of Students at PBL Junior High School during the 2018-2019 school year and was preceded by stints as a functional life skills teacher at PBL Junior High School from 2015 to 2018 and a CDA teacher at what was then known as PBL East Lawn Elementary School in 2014 and 2015. Earlier, Busby was a support services teacher at the former Sangamon Elementary School in Mahomet, an instructional special education teacher at Rantoul Township High School, a special education resource teacher at St. Joseph Grade School, and a special education and junior high English and social studies teacher at St. Malachi School. Busby said she is excited to make a return to PBL High School, where she served as assistant principal from 2019 to 2023. I really enjoyed the high school, Busby said. I feel like that's where my passion lies, is with the high school, so I'm anxious and excited to get back. I'm really excited to get started. Her first goal as principal will be to listen and learn. My first goal for this first year is to listen and to learn from our teachers and our students about what their vision is and what they feel like the high school needs, Busby said. I want to hear all the great things that they've been doing, and I want to hear the things that they would like to improve on, and I want to help them make things happen. Busby, who earned a Bachelor of Science degree in special education in 2000 from Western Illinois University and a Master of Science degree in educational leadership from Eastern Illinois University in 2014, has lived in rural Paxton since 2015 with her husband Ryan and their five children. Their sons, Daniel, Ben, Daniel, and Isaiah, ages 24, 22, and 19, respectively, are all graduates from PBL, while daughters Cora and Lydia are currently PBL students entering 12th and 7th grades, respectively. During Busby's interview with the board, Malm said she spoke of how her five kids' interests vary, just like the interests of the high school student body, and how she wants to meet the needs of that vast breadth of interests. That stood out, Malm said. Also, the fact that Melinda really is someone who wants to live the mission of PBL, and she's going to do everything that she can within her means to make sure that she meets the mission statement. During her time at Clara Peterson Elementary School, Busby co-founded the Ford County Attendance Improvement Initiative, collaborating with county leaders to design strategies to reduce student absenteeism within the county's public schools. She also directed a department of 9 special ed teachers and related service professionals while chairing the district's Handbook Development Committee, which helps develop updates to school policies. As PBL High School's assistant principal, Busby chaired the school district's Wellness Committee, helping draft policy to ensure state compliance and students' well-being, and spearheaded a cross-building connections program using standardized data, smoothing the 8th to 9th grade pipeline for incoming students. As PBL Junior High School's Dean of Students, Busby launched and chaired the district-wide Attendance Improvement Committee, establishing interventions that targeted and reduced chronic absenteeism across all three schools, and led the Junior High's Handbook Committee to codify and implement updated policies. In 2018, she was nominated for the Illinois Principal Association's Corn Belt Region Staff Member of the Year Award. As a teacher at PBL, Busby developed the Panther Pals Peer Monitoring Program to foster positive peer relationships and friendships among students with disabilities and their peers. In her spare time, Busby enjoys working out at the gym, running, and spending time outdoors, including camping and fishing. There are only two obituaries in this week's Ford County Chronicle, and we'll turn to them now. Vera I. Knapp, or Knapp, Cisna Park. Vera I. Knapp, 80, of West Lafayette, Indiana, formerly of Cisna Park, died Tuesday, June 23rd at 1019 Senior Living in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Funeral services were held Tuesday, June 30th at the Christian Bible Park in Cisna Park, with the Reverend Steve Hall officiating. Burial followed in the Cisna Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be sent to the Christian Bible Church Mission Board in Cisna Park. Georgiana Joey Thompson, Gibson City. Georgiana Joey Thompson, 86, of Gibson City, died Monday, June 22nd, at her home, surrounded by her family. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson Area Hospital Annex. We'll go back to the front page, and from the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board, major renovation of High School I. Funding possibilities include 1% countywide sales tax. Gibson City. Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District officials are considering an extensive $20 million renovation of GCMS High School and possibly asking voters to authorize a new countywide 1% sales tax to help pay for it. Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said the proposed project, introduced to the school board at its June 24th meeting, would involve the replacement of the school's old boiler system and piping, asbestos floor and ceiling tiles, and numerous covered-up windows at the front of the building that would be exposed as part of a new-look exterior facade. The project is still in its early planning stage, but the school board is now preparing to get busy working with engineers and architects on what is expected to be a multi-year process to get the project shovel-ready, Darnell said. Construction could begin as early as summer 2028, or more likely, summer 2029. Either way, the project would be completed over two summers, Darnell said, with demolition occurring over the first summer and then renovations over the second. It's a pretty invasive total remodel of about 80% of our classroom spaces, Darnell said. It's going to cost somewhere between $17 million and $20 million. Various options are being explored to pay for the project, including the possibility of asking Ford County voters for authorization to establish a 1% sales tax that would be used almost exclusively by the Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, Paxton Buckley Loda, and Tri Point school districts to pay for school facilities. The so-called 1% county school facilities tax was rejected by voters in March 2024, the last time the county's public schools sought to establish one via a ballot referendum. Back then, it would have brought in a projected $500,000 a year to both GCMS and PBL, and more than $100,000 annually to TriPoint, with the funds distributed based on each district's enrollment, officials said at the time. The sales tax referendum If a sales tax referendum were to be pursued, at least two of the three school boards would need to first approve a resolution to move forward with the ballot question. While the referendum would not appear on this November's general election ballot due to time constraints, it would appear on a future one, Darnell said. If established, the sales tax could pay for all of the GCMS High School renovation project, Darnell said, and help pay for potential building upgrades at PBL and TriPoint 2, although he noted it is not the only funding solution available. There's a lot of ways that we can get to that end to pay for the project, Darnell said. We can afford as a school district to do it. It's just a matter of how. In addition to the possible new sales tax, another funding option would be to borrow the money and pay it back over time via a bond issuance. Unlike the sales tax, that option would not require a referendum, Darnell said, unless the district's property tax rate would be greatly impacted as a result. We have more than enough bonding capacity, Darnell said, but we're also very sensitive to the fact that we want to try to maintain our tax rate. Darnell said the district is still 12 to 18 months out from any money decisions being made. In upcoming months, GCMS will be working with the architectural and engineering firm Performance Services on everything from the project's design and scope to its cost and funding. Once plans are finalized, bids would be sought from contractors, with the bidding process possibly happening as early as this winter or next spring, under an ideal scenario in which construction would begin in summer 2028. Whether construction gets going that summer or instead in summer 29, which Darnell said is a more likely scenario, students and staff would be using unfinished classroom space for the entire school year in between demolition and renovations. They'll demo everything the preceding summer, so instead of having fancy finished floors, they would have rough, unfinished floors, Darnell said. Our floors are going to be that way for a school year. It's not going to be pleasant for the year of construction. It's just not going to be pretty for a year. Darnell said alternative options, such as bringing in temporary mobile classrooms or changing the school calendar to allow the work to be completed in only one summer, have been explored, but do not seem to be any better. The best possible pathway is to do it over 2 years and live in a construction zone, Darnell said. Also from the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School Board, we have $15,000 donation to be used to buy new piano. Gibson City First Presbyterian Church gives to GCMS Music Department, Gibson City. Ahead of its planned closure, the First Presbyterian Church of Gibson City recently donated $15,000 of its remaining funds to the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District to be used to buy a new concert piano for the high school's music department. The school board voted to accept the donation, among others, during its monthly meeting on Wednesday, June 24th. They've been redistributing their remaining resources donated from some benefactors, and they wanted to contribute to our music department, Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said of the soon-to-be-shuttered church. The timing of the donation actually worked out really great, Darnell noted, because the high school's music program was in need of a new concert piano, and now it has enough funds to obtain one. We have not purchased a new piano in probably 15 years, Darnell said. So about $12,000 of that $15,000 is going toward a piano that will be used routinely in performances at our high schools. Other donations accepted as part of the board's approval of a consent agenda for the meeting, including an $88,449 donation from the GCMS Educational Foundation for Teachers' Grants. And several donations to the high school's FFA program, including donations of $600 from Patricia and Henry Liu, $50 from Cynthia Bathgate, and $100 apiece from Diane Bathgate and Freeze Insurance. There was also a $20 anonymous donation for the Carol Rhodes Memorial. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.